This podcast is part of the Deluxe Edition Network. To find other great shows on the network, head over to deluxeeditionnetwork.com. That's deluxeeditionnetwork.com.
This podcast is brought to you by
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Are you tired of seeing the world through a whitewashed or Eurocentric lens? Do you want to learn how to view the world from a more Black point of view? Then check out Afrocentric, the podcast that explores the importance of an Afrocentric gaze while navigating white spaces. Hosted by me, Morgan Gray. Each episode features thought-provoking conversations on Black culture, Black perspectives, as well as the Black experience. Because here, we understand that Black lives are not a monolithic experience, and there is more than one way to view it. Our goal is always to advocate, discuss, and inform Black Americans about the importance of evolving past their perspectives through an Afrocentric lens. Subscribe to Afrocentric today on your favorite podcast platform and join the conversation on social media using hashtag Afrocentric. I'll talk to you guys soon. Bye-bye.
How you doing? Do you enjoy discovering new podcasts? Well, then you, my friend, are in luck. All you've got to do is pop on over to deluxeeditionnetwork.com and check out April's podcast of the month, Quid Pro Quo, and the Stephen Crypto Podcast. Quid Pro Quo is a weekly film podcast inspired by the quid pro quo scene from Silence of the Lambs, while the Stephen Crypto Podcast folks enjoy casually talking about all things pop culture while providing an outlet for creators to promote their projects. So don't be a friggin' jamoke and give these amazing Deluxe Edition Network shows a try today.
Thing is, Butch, right now, you got ability. But painful as it may be, ability don't last. And your days are just about over. Now that's a hard motherfucking fact of life. But that's a fact of life your ass is gonna have to get realistic about. See, this business is filled to the brim with unrealistic motherfuckers. Motherfuckers who thought their ass would age like wine. If you mean it turns to vinegar, it does. If you mean it gets better with age, it don't. Besides, Butch, how many fights do you think you got in you anyway? Two? Boxers don't have an old timer's thing. You came close, but you never made it. But if you were gonna make it, you would have made it before now.
Welcome all you inglorious bastards to another episode of Character Study, the monthly series dedicated to exploring the psychological makeup, motivations, and complexities of the characters that reside in the world of Pulp Fiction. I'm your host, the Reverend Scott K., and on this month's episode, we'll be focusing our examination on the black, bald, and doesn't look like a bitch gangster, Marcellus Wallace, to see what makes him tick. Joining me on this exploration is friend of the show and co-host of the Bachata Talk podcast, Mr. Frank Hannon. Welcome back, Mr. Hannon. M.A. Tarantino, be with you always.
And also with you, sir.
You have made it back. Somehow we keep scheduling you. I don't know how. I got to start talking to somebody about this. We got to figure this out.
Everyone keeps coming back.
I need a new jacket, man. Eight timers club.
I know you're getting close. Yeah. And not only that, actually, do we have you on again? I don't know how to say we. I always say we here at the church. It's just fucking me. I don't know why I say we. There's no we. It's a me. But, you know, I like to make it sound like it's a major organization.
Maybe that's why you say we. I think I'm on for the panel this year.
You are on for a panel. That's right. Yeah, you don't get as many, you know, you didn't pass the test last year, I have to tell you. So. You and Pat got cut down, you know. We had to come in, and they were a couple of snoozers, and we had to say, we're going to move in a new direction.
Didn't make the cut.
Didn't make the cut this season. We had to go in a new direction.
The ratings were down. Oh, jeez.
I know. My Spotify rap said, look, you did okay, but these two guys on the podcast really sank in the numbers.
Look at the rankings, motherfucker.
Jesus. One guy, every question to him is a fucking tough question, and another guy does go in another direction, doesn't want to stand the show's focus, so we had to cut him out. No, but how have you been, and what are your newest endeavors over at the Bachata Talk, since the last time you were on was the Christmas special? So we didn't really talk about we talked about Christmas and some other ridiculous stuff that really probably nothing to do with Christmas.
Good shit, though. But Chata Talk is going well. Not recording as much as we would like, as far as, like, you know, we were at a point where we were recording weekly, and then kind of changed with work schedules and everything. Mm. However, we're at 52, so we're proud of that.
Wow, there you go.
Yeah. So I'm proud of that. We both are, and we might be setting up an interview with this bachata artist who's up and coming. So we don't get to do a lot of interviews, so that's pretty fun. You know, we enjoy just talking shit by ourselves. We feel more freedom there, but the fact that we've been able to do like three or four interviews with like underground bachata artists has been pretty cool, because other artists get interested in that, you know.
Yeah.
And, so it's been fun, and we're looking forward to it. We just enjoy the concepts. Actually, listening to your show, which I listen to all the time. Sometimes I wish there was more episodes. I'm like, fuck, I already heard this shit. Gotta go back and listen to other ones. I got some ideas, so I actually did this little like. It sounds like a commercial thing with the theme music of Law and Order.
There you go.
And I did the whole thing with like, these are their stories. Like, you know, with me talking over it. And I got that idea from you, just listening to all the stuff you create. So I was like, man, I could try some shit. Let me try.
It's fun. It's fun.
Yeah. So, yeah.
Just so, as you know, the usually the episode that follows the week after this is usually the Inglourious Basterds. I think Glorious Blue Balls, that's new.
Yeah.
And so if you could, anyone who hasn't listened to it, there's a song that talks about blue balls, and then and I did all the work for it, and I decided to sing in a falsetto.
But yeah, man.
If anyone has a podcast, the funny thing is you've got headphones on, you've got your mic, I can hear the guests, I can hear my voice, but anyone who's not under the headphones in my house thinks I'm out of my fucking mind. I mean, it's just like... And there's no music playing because it's only in the headphones. So I'm just in here all by myself singing a high-pitched voice. And probably everyone else in the house is like, what the fuck is happening? I'm surprised the doors haven't kicked in. I'm throwing away in a straitjacket.
I was just watching the video for Tribute, the Tenacious D, when people hear them outside.
Yes.
And it's just them like yelling. They don't hear all the awesomeness, you know? You gotta believe me.
So yeah, that's the fun. It's the fun of podcasting. It really is. It's some of the production stuff you can do. You know, you want to try to up your value a little bit, and you want to have some fun with it. You know, I think, or I hope at least, it adds value. I think it breaks up the monotony sometimes. I like to break up the monotony, as even in this show, I like to add a few things that you know. Then now you know you're in different segments. You know what I mean? I kind of like
the
to
commercials.
Break it
I'm
up
glad
a bit.
That you keep doing the commercials, man.
I know. I'm going to be recording some new ones this weekend.
I
can't just have the same six. I've got to put myself in.
But
it,
even at the beginning when you started, when you used to do the ads. For Anchor, I used to love
yes,
yours was like, you know, original, you know.
Yeah.
Like so now that you get to do these commercials as well, it's even more fun to listen to.
Well, I'm glad you appreciate them. I hope other who listen do as well, and they don't just think some
they
fucking
get the
psycho.
They're like that sounds like him, but what is this for?
Like I said, I should have someone record what it sounds like on the other side of the wall, what they hear as compared to what I hear. But we're not here to talk about the bullshit I do. We're here to talk about Marcellus Wallace, the motherfucking man. Exactly. motherfucker. We're here to talk about the big, black, bald, but not bitch-looking gangster who puts fear into the hearts of all in L.A. who cross him. What is your personal connection with this amazing character? What was your initial impression? And has that changed over time?
Okay, I love the question. It's a hard motherfucking... No, it's not. at the beginning, since I was so young when I watched it, I was just, like, scared watching it, really, you know, watching that movie. But with time, I think I appreciated the character more and more. Like, I feel like even if I watched it tomorrow, I'll appreciate it more. Because I just appreciate what Tarantino did. It almost reminds me or makes me think of a smaller version of what he did with Bill.
Yes,
where it's
yes.
like a villain that you don't see. You know, you only hear the voice. And it's almost like I was, you know, like I think of a villain in a cartoon or something, or Austin Powers, or not Austin Powers, but, you know, like James Bond, where it's like a super villain, you know, and they're bigger than the movie sometimes, or bigger than the, I don't know how to explain it really.
I know what
but
you
it's
mean,
like,
yeah.
It's a lot of fear-inducing,
yeah.
You know, things that happen where even you don't see them or they're not on screen that much sometimes, but they are remembered.
It seems to be the lack of seeing him, plus the reaction to everyone's, the drop of his name, builds the anticipation and the mythology for us as the audience. Which was a genius way to do
very
it.
Very powerful.
I mean, like you said, in Kill Bill, it's, we don't do the head, it's just the hand holding onto the sword. You know, it's Bill's hand until we see him in number two.
And then the way everybody speaks of him, to when, you know, when they write his name, Hattori Hanzo writes his name on the window, like all these things, It's just amazing. So I think with Marcellus Wallace, it was like that too. Like, you are aware that he is feared, even if you don't know exactly all the reasons why. You know, so as far as a connection, I don't know if I ever felt a connection to him, but I definitely feel like I was afraid of him at first, watching the movie, not knowing. And then with time, I just appreciated how cool the character was. Yeah.
And he is a cool motherfucking character.
Hell yeah.
And for those who don't know, when you're watching the movie, obviously there's the 5-minute opening where he's talking with Butch, where we start with just his voice and a tight shot of a close-up of Butch. Eventually, we go to the tight shot of the back of his head.
Yeah.
Later in that scene, we see him out of focus in the distance. Still don't know what he looks like. We see him again later in the, you know, another scene when we finally get to the Gold Watch after Butch has killed Floyd, the guy he's boxing against, where they come and talk to him. And once again, he's facing away from us. We just get the back of his head. So we still don't see him. We don't see him, his face, in the film until he's hit with the car. When he turns and goes, motherfucker. That's the first time we see his face, and he gets hit with the car. So it's a it's a real good lead up that we don't know who Marcellus Wallace is for quite some time. And, you know, in between the scene of meeting him and hearing about him, we've had the scene where we've talked about the foot.
Yes.
And then we get the scene of the whole going to the diner or going out on the date and all that stuff. We understand what's going on there. And then if you know this is Marcellus Wallace's wife, that whole lore is built up. And then we finally get him in that second act. And then then we understand who Marcellus Wallace is. So it's a bad motherfucker.
Night of the fight, you may feel a slight sting. That's pride fucking with you. Fuck pride. Pride only hurts. It never helps. You fight through that shit. Because a year from now, when you're kicking it in the Caribbean, you're gonna say to yourself, Marcellus Wallace was right.
No problem with that, Mr. Wallace.
In the fifth, your ass goes down.
All right, my friend, are you ready to jump into Mr. Wallace's character study? All right.
And now, the AI psychological evaluation.
Now, in order for us to better understand the psychological makeup of Marcellus Wallace, I turned to AI and asked it to perform a psychological evaluation on him. And here are the results of that very evaluation. Marcellus exhibits many antisocial personality traits, including a lack of empathy, a willingness to use violence, and a desire for control. Mr. Wasser likely has a strong sense of entitlement and grandiosity. He sees himself as above the law and has no qualms about using force and intimidation to maintain his position of power. This suggests narcissistic and Machiavellian tendencies. His lavish lifestyle and expensive clothing also speak to narcissism and materialism. Underneath his tough exterior, Marcellus may be driven by feelings of insecurity and inadequacy. His need to dominate others compensates for these feelings. His fear of losing power or being undermined may drive him to maintain a tough exterior and to assert his dominance in all situations. He also demonstrates a ruthless and violent streak, particularly in his dealings with those who cross him. This propensity for aggression could be indicative of unresolved anger or a history of trauma, leading him to resort to intimidation and forces as a means of asserting his authority and protecting himself from perceived threats. Marcellus's relationship seemed devoid of genuine intimacy. His marriage to Mia appears strained and distant. He socializes primarily with criminal associates, not true friends. This further points to narcissism and antisocial traits, as he struggles to connect emotionally with others. However, Marcellus displays a strong sense of loyalty and camaraderie with those he trusts, such as his relationship with Vincent Vega, his enforcer. This loyalty suggests a deep-seated need for connection and belonging, which may stem from a lack of familial support or past experiences of betrayal. Marcellus Wallace exhibits many of the hallmark traits of antisocial personality disorder. Psychological intervention would be recommended, but likely resisted given his defensive nature and resistance to being vulnerable. Ongoing criminal behavior can be predicted unless external controls are imposed. Remorse, empathy, and meaningful relationships are likely lacking. What do you think of AI, the power of AI, and its ability to give a little diagnosis, a little look into Marcellus Wallace, just using what it knows of him from the movie and various sources?
So you just put his name? Like, what the?
I go in and I do a little prompt. It says, you are a psychologist. You have to kind of put in there that this is for hypothetical, because it always gives you some kind of like, it really does. It tells you like, you know, I'm not a real psychologist. Like, I know, motherfucker. I know you're not a psychologist. I know that you're designed to say this so that people don't that people don't, you just go, hey, my AI told me that I have schizophrenia. You know what I mean? Like, I get it. You can't self-diagnose yourself. Exactly. It's like, oh, I'm not a doctor. Hold your horses. I don't know if I can do this. So you type in, you know, I use a couple AI sources. So I kind of do a couple just to cross-reference. And I just basically say, you're a psychologist. Do a hypothetical analysis of the character from Pulp Fiction. And I give the name based on what you know about this character. And honestly, as soon as I hit enter, it's like, it's done. And it's done in 10 to 15 seconds. It saves me hours, money too, because I would have, you know, what psychologist is going to come on here? You know, just going to sit there, watch the movie, write down notes. If not for free, you know what I mean? And yeah, not for 12 characters, that's not going to happen. So the AI, you know, the ability, especially in its infancy stages still, is remarkable. But it's a really good tool. And it was one of those things that I knew I was going to use when we started this this series this year. And so this it's fun, man.
About a lot of shit,
well,
bro. That's
I wanted
cool.
to streamline it for myself as well. So because I'm doing way more episodes, I didn't want to inundate myself with too much work. So why not let AI do it? AI did the heavy lifting. Then I just read it back. It's beautiful.
It's a smart motherfucker. That's
right. I think it hits a lot of interesting points. Now, he is the third of the four people we have talked about who have antisocial personality disorder.
And the control thing, I think, is on the head, too.
Yeah. And then, like, you know, being, you know, having to use intimidation and force, protecting him against perceived threats. Like, there's a lot of, it's fun because when you're watching these movies and anything you watch with the characters, you have a sense of who they might be. But when you have an opportunity to have something analyze them, and obviously they're characters, but on everything that AI now knows about them, is able to break this down. It's amazing that the threads that it goes in and pulls out and says and dissects them and goes, they've got this, they do this. And you kind of sit there and you go, oh yeah, he does. And anyone who watches the movie knows that, like, and we're going to get into it in a little bit, but his relationship with Mia, there's a lot of stuff underlying going on. We talked about it last month. Yeah.
You've talked about that a lot. Like even I think even before this season, you talked about the relationship, you know? So that's super interesting, man. That's fucking dire though.
But you know, the thing is, it's just great. That's the great subtext and context within the film is that when it was being written and being acted, it's there, you know? Yeah, we can start to imply it, but it's intentionally there. Things are done the way they're done. Things aren't said the way they're said.
Yeah.
Intentionally, so that we get the idea that why would Mia and Vincent put themselves in danger's way if Mia was happy? You know what I mean?
Yes.
How do we make it not so, like, cut and dry? We're like, oh, Mia's not happy with him because he's cheating on her. That's always the easy workaround, right? Like, we can make it okay that Mia's doing something by making it like Marcellus cheats. What if he's just an absent husband? You know what I mean? And how do we show that?
Yeah.
Every time they're together, there's not a whole lot of romantic stuff going on. They don't even talk to each other. They don't say a word to each other in the entire film. So there's that. And so now us, we can infer that it may be a relationship of convenience for both, you know, trophy wife, wealthy man, works out for both of them,
yeah,
kind of thing.
If anything, she might have been somebody who's constantly asking him to take her out. And he's like, mm-hmm. I ain't got time for this shit, you know? Like,
yeah.
And it might be, and it might be hard for him maybe to do those little things, yeah. So then he asks somebody else to do it who he trusts,
Yeah. But it's just really awesome, the power that it has. It even says at the end that this is not a real evaluation. You need a real, you know, the whole, in 10 years from now, it's going to tell us to fuck ourselves, we're slaves. And right now it's like being nice to me. You know what I mean? Like, it's like, hey. Well, by the way, I'm not a psychologist. You may want to change. And I also want to go like, you understand what part of, I said character, you know what I mean? Like who are you hurting here? It's a fucking character. Yeah.
In 10 years, it's going to be like, remember, analyze this.
Exactly.
It's going to be like, I'm going to go out on a limb here. I think your friend is you. Okay.
Yeah. Oh my God. It's just like, I said the character from the movie. I didn't say, hey, my Uncle Joe, this, I don't know, might be a pervert. How would you analyze him? You know? So if you have anyone out there, get a chance, use AI for all its power. It's quite amazing. It can help with a lot of creative angles.
What you got?
He booked his trainer. He says he don't know nothing. I believe him. Think we surprised his ass. Same as
no,
us.
We don't want to think. We want to know. Take him to the kennel, sick the dogs on his ass. We'll find out for goddamn sure what he knows and what he don't.
What's your search? How do you want it done?
I'm prepared to scour the earth for that motherfucker. If Butch goes to Indochina, I want a nigga hiding in a bowl of rice ready to pop a cap in his ass.
I will take care of it.
But we should talk about who the fuck is Marcellus Wallace. Does he look like a bitch?
Hell no.
Hell no, he doesn't look like a bitch. And the great thing is now that you know the movie, and I'm surprised I didn't laugh, because you don't see Marcellus right away. But you know, I mean, look, bald black man, deep voice, that's intimidating right out the gate. But when he says that he looked like a bitch, and the first thing we see is his bald head and that band on the back, people should have laughed, because you go, no, he doesn't look like a bitch. You know what I mean? You're kind of like, no, he definitely doesn't.
Yeah, like, this is what they were talking about? God damn.
But here's what we actually know about Marcellus. He's the head of a criminal outfit headquartered in L.A. He has other criminal enterprises in at least Amsterdam and Florida. He is married to Mia, who is a former actress. He's a very protective husband with a violent sense of retribution.
Yes.
He has a lavish home in the Hollywood Hills. And lastly, he is now in possession of a very valuable object contained in a briefcase. That is the enigma of the power of Marcellus Wallace. That is what we know about him. And it's not a ton, but it is more than Jules, and it's also more than Mia, in my opinion.
That's true.
You know, we know Vincent and him, we know a lot more about those two characters just from the lore of even Marcellus Wallace. We get a good mythology of Marcellus. And we learn more about Vincent because Vincent's returned from Amsterdam. So he's talking all about himself to Jules. We know barely nothing about Jules. And we know barely nothing about Mia. They're like really two strangers in this story that we have to learn about. And still, even afterwards, don't know a whole lot about. But we get to know a lot about both Vincent and Marcellus. Now, where do we think Marcellus hails from? Is he a local product who quickly climbed the ranks of the LA's criminal underbelly? Or did he come from somewhere outside the system and work his way in? Where do we think that Marcellus is from? Any ideas, Mr. Hannon?
This is from AI, okay? When you ask that, it makes me think that he is, let's say, born and raised in LA. I don't know if where he is now, if that's where he was born.
Mm-hmm. I don't think so.
That he basically came to power, mm-hmm. and then he maybe he came from a poor background, or that's why he wants to be so lavish now, mm-hmm. like, and enjoy luxury,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I don't know why he is the way he is, but I think that it definitely has to do with his past, why he basically values this control so much, you know?
I agree.
And the power he has. But I definitely think it's like a local thing, like L.A.
Yeah, I think he's L.A. born and bred. May have come from poverty, but I think that not only did he have like a, I don't want to say a tough upbringing, but he was learned to be tough in his upbringing. But I also believe he also learned, he was a very smart, book smart student as well. Because you can be a tough criminal where you're quick to violence and it's your first answer because it's all you know. But he thinks in like chess moves, you know, like mm-hmm. says, we don't want to know. We don't want to think. We want to know. Like when he says stuff like that, you realize that he's thinking things out. He's asking even when Jules is calling him, what's the situation? I need all the particulars so I know what I need to do to make this. I need to know what happens if I do nothing. He is he's making moves. He's not like, just kill this motherfucker. He is thinking it out. It's why when we're going to into the basement scene, but it's why when what happens to him there, he doesn't just immediately kill Zed. There's going to be an example is going to be made. It's why like when Butch, he feels just double crossed him. I want a person hiding in a bowl of rice in Indochina. Like, you know, like he has got himself so well put together. That's why he's on top. You know, like that's why he's in the lavish home. That's why he's got what he's got. He's not just some thug from the street. He's not just a gangster from the street. He may be from the streets, but I feel he is street smart and book smart, which is a deadly combination. That's where that's where rulers come from. You know, just being able to shoot somebody with a gun, that doesn't make you boss material.
Yeah.
Knowing when and why you should or shouldn't. Knowing what the ripple effect of this decision is going to be, that makes you the boss. And that's why I think he exudes when we watch him, you know, like the whole conversation, I ain't got no time with damn boxing, you know, like fuck pride. Like he's basically, he's not even just telling Bruce Willis's character Butch to throw the fight. He's explaining the reasons. This money is the best reason for him to throw the fight. He's never going to have an attempt at getting this close to this kind of money again. Like he's breaking it down for him. He's not being mean. He's like, look, if you had your time, it's past. Fuck your pride. Take the fall. Take this money and you're set for life. So he's definitely not just some peon from the streets who drops out, gets into a drug game and move up.
He has high connections and resources. I mean, the whole thing with him and the wolf.
Yes. You know? Absolutely.
How did that come to be? Like, he's obviously somebody who is, I think he has a hand in a lot more than obviously we get to know in Pulp Fiction. You know, that's what I think.
Oh, yeah. He sent Vincent to Amsterdam, so he's got some stuff in there. He's going to Florida for business, obviously. That's why he's taking her out. So he's making moves. He's making global moves with his empire. It's like you said, it's how he's able to just call Winston Wolfe at some, I don't know what that is. We'll get into that in that episode. I don't know where he was that morning at 10 a.m. playing some kind of high stakes poker a la Casino Royale in the hotel at 10 a.m.
Like, probably just finishing up.
I don't know what the hell is going on.
Yeah, I just finished playing with Sinatra Jr.
But he's able to reach out to him, and he's moving. I'm 30 minutes away. I'll be there in 10. I love that. But he's able to call him up and move, you know, so he's got moves to make. So he is, he's no dummy. Now, do we think that Marcellus was always pursuing a life of crime?
I want to say that I would have to know if he had any other ambitions, but I think that whenever, I don't know. I feel like something happened where he saw an opportunity, took it, and that's where he was like, this is what I'm going to do. Power. I think that he fell in love with power at some point.
He also, if he's smart, he probably saw that it's a sucker game to do the right way. You know, like, I'm smart, I'm intimidating, I've got power, I can make money. I mean, it's no different than real regular businesses, right? Like, most major corporations have done something gangster to get where the fuck they are. You know, they've done a corporate takeover. They've done something gangster to take over what they've got, you know? So they've crushed a little man and stepped on him just so they can put their fucking logo on everything. You know what I mean?
That's an interesting question because you said he's also book smart. So it is possible that he had another goal and then he just decided, like you said, I'm going this way, but I'm taking this smarts with me, like my education or what I know, because it doesn't have to be necessarily education in school. He's just a smart man. You know, we don't know. Mm-hmm.
If you think of three of Tarantino's best villains or most dangerous villains, Marcellus, Hans, and Bill, they're all very intelligent men. That's dangerous. That's more dangerous than just being a tough guy. You know, so we don't know if Jules is just a tough guy. I think Jules is more than just a tough guy. I just think Jules is happy where he's at. He doesn't give a fuck. But you know, you've got others out, like Stuntman Mike, not a smart guy. You know what I mean? Just not a smart guy. Good villain, but not a smart guy. You know? So when, yeah, when you have smart villains, that's what makes them more dangerous. You know, acting on emotion is easy, but when there's no emotion to it, like when Hans Landa just wants to kill the Jews because it's just a job he has to do and he wants to be the best at it, it has nothing to do with them being Jewish, that's more dangerous, you know? That's just straightforward, you know? Same with Billy. He's like, you don't want to go around the world killing human beings for large sums of money? He's like, you know? And then Marcellus, that's powerful, right? Like, men of power, the dangerous ones are the ones who are smart, who are intelligent, who when their decisions are made, they have thought them out to the nth degree.
Yeah, I feel like it's those characters specifically show power, not just evil. Mm-hmm. Like, you're like, this motherfucker is just a bad guy. But like what you're saying, that's what that tells me, that yeah, you feel like there's power. People fear them because of that power too. I was listening to your last episode of Watch This or Die on the Hateful Eight just a few days ago. And the list that you guys did at the end of that episode was the top five villains from Tarantino. And I was listening to that, and I did think of Marcellus as I was listening. You know, and I thought of Bill too, of course. And I think you both had Landa, or one of you had Landa at two, or one had Landa at one. But it was, obviously, Landa was like,
yeah, he's
like at the top.
He is kind of like the benchmark in the Tarantino world. Yeah. He made a glass of milk scary. But in fairness, Marcellus makes a Band-Aid look pretty fucking badass, right? Like, if that's on the back of Jim Carrey's neck, you're laughing. You're like, look at this putz. But on the back of his neck.
No, this is such a crazy introduction when you find out, like, how it happened and how that's, well, from what I understand, like, that was just, he was wearing a Band-Aid for real.
It was a real, he had like a scar, he didn't like it, so they put a Band-Aid on. Yeah. Like, that looks pretty good. And
let's do it, yeah.
I mean, that led to fan theories of his soul had been sucked out to the bed. Like, again, I love fan theories, but I mean, that's crazy, right? Like, that's how it starts. But I think Marcellus, I don't know that he was always aiming for a world of crime, but I think early on he saw that he was more valuable and his skill set is more valuable in crime, and he was going to do better than trying to do it the old-fashioned American dream bullshit way. The real American dream is the crime way. Let's be honest. Hey. We've been gangsters since day one. Since we landed here, we were given food and we gave people back pox blankets. That's some nefarious shit, you know? With the English, we were like, hey, take your fucking Union Jack and blow it up your ass. You're out of here. They're like, but we dress in red suits and walk across the land and kneel in fire. We're like, fuck you. We're shooting you from the trees. We're shooting you from the trees, guerrilla warfare style, cocksuckers. Here's your fucking teeth. It's in the water. The good and bad. It's just how America is. We've gangstered everything, you know?
It is what it is.
I'm not saying it's right. I'm just saying it's what we do, right? Gangsters are a brand is all I'm saying. That's what we do. So I think he saw that early on. I think he probably grew up in an area that was poor, maybe Compton, maybe Long Beach, maybe Inglewood, and he saw the hustlers on the street, but he was more enamored by the people running it from behind the scenes, and he realized how he could do that.
I
think he saw, I'm not going to die in these streets being some hustler. Yeah. I want to be, you know, I want to run this.
Yeah,
I don't want to make the donuts. I want to own the fucking building that has the donuts in them. And that's his thought process.
More like a visionary mentality he had back then to like, I can see myself running this. Yeah. And that's cool.
Now, how do we think he met Mia? Because what I love is, in the beginning of the movie, when, you know, they're walking in after they do the whole, we should have shotguns for this deal, he's talking about, you know, Mia, and he was like, how did the big man meet her? And he goes, I don't know how people meet people. And then he just goes, she used to be an actress. So Jules has no idea how the two met. We don't know what their story is. I think that they met somehow at a party.
At an event.
But at an event that's not, I don't think it's a Hollywood event. I think it's more of an event where, like, maybe Mia was there as part of an acting job she was hired on to be like, you know, sometimes people take jobs as like hostesses or serving something at a party. This wasn't like a producer party.
What about even a boxing event? If she's really could be into that. Boxing. Yeah.
Maybe she was the ring girl or something like that at one point.
If she is a former actress, she could have just been somebody who was there either to be in, because she wanted to go to an event to be seen because she's thinking other people are going to be there. Because the way I see it, even if he's not like going to big Hollywood parties, at these boxing events, you will see some big money people.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, then this dude's throwing them. He's clearly some kind of Don King of figure out in fucking LA. So, yeah, I mean, it could be something like that. Or they're trying to produce some B film, trying to get money. Maybe she's the actress of it. You know what I mean?
Like an investor.
He's an investor. Yeah, someone knows him. I got this movie. You want to invest in it? You know, and he's kind of like, do you know what I do? The fuck I am.
Fox Sports 5.
Yeah, exactly. Whatever. You know, it could be something like that. Or maybe she was on someone else's arm at an event. You know what I mean? And then he just said, I got the meats. For all those of you out there don't know, Ving Rhames is the voice. And I've had this conversation, I think it was Sean. Ving Rhames is the voice of Arby's We've Got the Meats. So just in case you were unaware, that is who that is.
I remember you two talking about that.
So I think that's you know, probably a good way that they met. I think it is a marriage of convenience. I think it's a trophy wife. I mean, she's obviously a maybe second, third rate actress.
So when you say convenience, I mean more convenience for her or for him? Because I feel like maybe actually just liked what he saw.
Well, so something about convenience is she's the trophy wife. She dotes on his needs. I don't want it to sound awful. You know, I'm not trying to be sexist, but
you've never said nothing awful here.
Listen, we're adults, okay? Men are attracted to pretty things. We're sexual in nature. We're easily duped with that. We're not that smart, obviously. Vincent almost dies because of this, all right? So Tony Rocket Horror, which we'll get into, he got thrown off the balcony possibly because of it. So, you know, he's got the pretty girl who, you know, is going to stay by his side. And she's a struggling actress, probably attracted to him. I'm not saying they're not attracted, but probably got with him because it was the security. He was going to give her security. She wasn't making as an actress. Here's this guy. She doesn't have to do anything. She doesn't have to do anything. He takes care of her completely. They live in the Hollywood Hills, you know? I'm not saying they didn't originally probably like each other or love each other, but as we get into this move, as we go through this film, we realize early that this is not a relationship in the stage we're at that's a great one. You know, it does feel like they're just there together.
You don't see them interacting, like you always say. Like, they don't speak to each other. So maybe at the beginning, they liked each other, like you say. And when you ask a question, that's what I think. I think that at the beginning, he liked her, you know, and maybe she's the one that saw more of a ambition there of an opportunity, I think.
You know, he's got a girl who she's a former actress. She is not gonna rat him out because he's giving her what she needs, and she probably doesn't give a shit what he does with his life. She seems to be okay. She knows who he is. When she talks, she knows Tony Rock Horror. She knows who Vincent is. She knows what Vincent does. Like, she's not dumb. She's in the fucking dressing room where the guy has died, and they're talking about it. And how do you want a search done? She knows. Like, he didn't ask her to leave. She knows what's going on. She's not saying shit. She's not snitching. So, because she likes what she says. She likes the power of him. She likes the fact that he is, like, all she has to do is whisper his fucking name and shit is going to happen. I mean, Travolta's character, Vincent, dances because she says, I believe my husband, your boss, told you to take me out and do whatever I want to do. You know what I mean? It's like, let me explain this to you. We're dancing or you're dying. You know what I mean?
So it works for both in different ways.
For both of them, yeah. He's got a pretty girl on the side. She's not going to do a whole lot. You know, she's there for, like, you know what I'm trying to say without me having to come across some kind of piece of shit over here, right? Like, I'm just saying, right? Come on.
And maybe if he's not trying to do the whole emotional thing, it works for him because there for what she wants and, you know. He's there for what he wants, you know? So maybe they make it work that way, you know? They made the marriage work. It's an arranged marriage of sorts.
He's old school. He's not going to show emotion. I mean, this is made in the 90s. Men showing their feelings wasn't in then, you know?
Yeah.
A tough, bald black guy's going to just shed a fucking tear? Yeah. What he goes through in this movie, at any point, does he show emotion outside of fucking pure vengeance and I'm going to fucking kill you?
Yeah.
No, right? Like, some of us would be crying. We'd be weeping for what happened. And he was just like, step aside, butch. It's like, okay. And I love, well, we'll get into a second, but I love the rattlesnake sound when he stands up. Look, Marcellus Wallace is old school bad motherfucker.
He didn't show weakness at all.
Never. Never does. Even when they're dragging back, he's like, fuck you. You know, he's like still to the end. Fuck you. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Even when he's getting punched, you better kill me, motherfucker. That's what he says to Butch. You better kill me, motherfucker. There is no bitch in Marcellus Wallace. None.
He got hit by a car. He got up right away.
Got up. I'll be damned.
And he shot one of the witnesses.
Oh, that's the humor I love of Tarantino films. I still love every time. And I give the actress credit for how she cries and she screams like, what? She's fucking wailing. Oh, so good.
Well, say she comes home. What do you think she'll do? Oh, no fucking shit, she'll freak. That ain't no kind of answer. I mean, you know I don't, how much, a lot or a little.
You got to appreciate what an explosive element this Bonnie situation is. I mean, she comes home from a hard day's work, finds a bunch of gangsters in her kitchen doing a bunch of gangster shit. Ain't no telling what she's liable to do.
Yeah, I've grasped that, Jules. All I'm doing is contemplating the ifs.
I don't want to hear about no motherfucking ifs. All I want to hear from your ass is, you ain't got no problem, Jules. I'm on the motherfucker. Go back in there, chill them niggas out, and wait for the cavalry, which should be coming directly.
You ain't got no problem, Jules. I'm on the motherfucker. Go back in there and chill them niggas out, and wait for the wolf, who should be coming directly.
You sending the wolf?
No, you feel better, motherfucker?
Shit, Negro, that's all you had to say.
Well, let's talk about a few of his relationships with some characters in our film. We'll start with our man, Jules from Inglewood. Now, I've discussed on his character study, and now that we've got Marcellus in the crosshairs this time, I have said the only person not afraid of Marcellus Wallace in this film is Jules Winfield. He's not afraid. Not afraid of him. Respects him. Knows his respect. Pecking order. But isn't afraid of him. He's not afraid of him at all. That's why I was like, you know, tell Marcel something like, he goes, I bet he lasts. He goes, I don't give a goddamn if he does. You know, like Jules is not afraid. So I've always felt that in the pecking order, I think Vincent's higher than Jules. And as I was doing these episodes, I'm starting to think it may be because the one person that Marcellus may would be Jules, and who would be the one formidable foe who also is not a bitch at any set stretch of the imagination in this film ever. So the two of them would be like two thundering fucking bulls running head on into each other. You know, the body count would be high, but I think he just keeps him, you know, you know, it keeps him happy, but we're not letting him, you know, we're not giving him, like, because if Jules was higher, Jules is taking me out. Jules is not taking me out. If Jules was higher up, maybe Jules was asked to go to Amsterdam. And again, we don't know the situation or circumstances of why he had to be sent to Amsterdam. He could have been sent there for reasons, kind of like in The Godfather, was like, we got to get you out of the country for a while and cool things off. Could have been a thing like that. Or it could just be like, my man, if I need something done, I send Vincent. He's the guy I know will always be there no matter what. What are your feelings on Jules and Marcellus?
My take also is that because he knows that Jules is not afraid of him, is why, like you said, the pecking order. But I don't think that Jules would ever try to take that spot. But
no,
just because
I agree.
I don't think Jules is interested in that. I don't think he is. But he also might know that Vincent is afraid of him. He's Vincent is loyal to me, but I know he's afraid of me. This guy is not afraid of me. So even if it's not that, maybe his insecurity would think, Marcellus would think that Jules is trying to take his spot. But I don't think Jules would.
No.
But he's maybe thinking, Jules will tell me to fuck off.
Yeah.
If he's not comfortable doing something that I asked him, but Vincent never would. Because Vincent is afraid when she gets the
ODs.
ODs, not because of her, but because of his own life mostly. Mm-hmm. I'm not saying that he doesn't care about another human being. I think he does, but he has to make the comment at the end that he would be in trouble.
Mm-hmm.
You know, about like when she says like, oh, Marcellus doesn't need to know about this. And she says that she would be in as much trouble as him. And he's like, I doubt it.
Yeah.
Yeah, like he made sure to say that because he knows that he's afraid of that. So I think it's mostly that. Like, he knows that Jules would not be willing to do everything he asked of him. Jules would not be afraid to say, hey, I ain't doing that shit.
Yep.
I work for you, but I have principles or I have lines, you know, like. You don't owe me or whatever. Mm-hmm. Just my boss, whatever. You pay me. I don't know, some shit like that, you know?
And I think Marcellus doesn't want to give him any reason to reconsider a shot at the throne. You know, he doesn't give him any reason to think, I should.
Yeah.
I can do this better than you can. And again, I think it's they both have a mutual respect. They both know who they are, and they're happy with their order. And I trust Jules to get this shit done.
Yeah.
But when it comes to other things, I'm going to trust Vincent for some other things, you know?
Yeah.
And as I said in the episode, Jules is the only person in that film who had their hands on the case who never looks inside.
Wow.
And the only person still alive who've seen inside the case was Pumpkin. So remember, he turns the case and opens it. Doesn't look at himself, then closes it. Vincent looked in the case, dead. Everyone in that apartment looked in the case, dead. So the only person to see it alive besides Marcellus Wallace is Pumpkin, at least for now. Who knows? Who knows what happened to Pumpkin after the...
Of course.
We don't know what happened after Pumpkin. We don't
know. He could have died another way if there's a real curse behind that.
Yep. Yeah. The curse of the glowing case. Yep.
I like that.
So yeah, I think Jules is... he trusts Jules a lot. He knows he can count on Jules to intimidate the fuck out of people. And Jules, I think, is one of the guys... I know he says pipe hitting, whatever. But I think Jules is one of the guys who may come and help him with the torture. But if not, Jules would have been the number one guy he sent to find Butch. Which is why Paul Calderon's character, Paul there from the bar, has taken his spot once he's left. You know, he's kind of like been brought up off the bench. But it would have been the two of them brought in to search. Mm. So there's that. Now, that leads my belief to why Vincent is also his number one. Again, we don't know why I sent him to Amsterdam, but he trusts Vincent. Because we're going to get into Mia in a little bit. And what we truly think about Mia and her intentions with other men. And maybe there's some stuff going on. Because, Vincent doesn't really know. And that's why Jules is like, if you met Mia, and then everyone laughs, and he goes, I got to take a piss. You know, they're all laughing because, one, they know what she looks like, and many, she's a honey trap. And Vincent's kind of like in the dark about this. And I think he does trust Vincent. Because if you think about through the whole movie, Vincent says, hey, touch her feet. You had to expect something was going to happen. He understood why Marcellus would be upset with Tony, toss his ass over. Then also, as I said on the episode, I'll stand with it. I think Vincent jerked off in the bathroom. He came out a whole different man. He was even talking to himself, this is a test of loyalty. I do what I got to do. And he did exactly what he needed to do. He didn't cross the line, which I think a lot of us thought. And in lesser movies, would have. So I like that Tarantino didn't write himself into a corner. He wrote himself a good way out, and it started early. And this is why anyone says he's a hack, you're fucking out of your mind. But the line of, I'm out of balloons. Are you okay with baggies? Throwaway line. Unless you know anything about the drug world, and we've talked about this, baggies are for cocaine, balloons are for heroin. She thinks it's cocaine. That's why she snorts it. Would she have overdosed? Right? Look, we're not all drug experts. Let's just allow it to happen. She overdoses. She goes down. Fine. It makes the movie better. But if she doesn't do that stuff, this is how he gets himself out of that. Well, what happens when he comes out? Because if he comes out and she's getting ready to drink, and maybe she's like, hey, you know what? I'm excited about this guy. I haven't felt this way in a while. We're gonna dance with the devil tonight. And Vince's like, no, I got to get in there and get one out. I'm not danger. I'm in danger close right now. But that's how he's able to switch it on us. You know what I mean? He's able to not like be like, oh, here we go. And the old fashioned, he gets seduced by the girl, you know, and then it's just the old stories we hear. Now they're going to try to keep it secret. And that story would have been boring. Her overdosing and the shit he has to go through to keep her alive so he doesn't get killed. That makes that story a lot more exciting. So Vince is the guy he trusts. He trusts him to go to Amsterdam, trusts him with everything. He's the guy he goes to. And if those of you hadn't heard, or if you have heard, he's the guy he went to Butch's apartment with. He and Butch are sitting there. It took me a while, probably maybe a decade or so. It's been about 30 years now. But it finally dawned on me, God, and like I said, it had been years. Like, I just was watching the movie, and I was just like, and I would give a pass. I'd be like, how does Vincent Vega not hear Butch opening a cupboard, them old wooden cupboards, ripping open a box of fucking hand-me-down Pop-Tarts, the cheap Walmart variety brand Pop-Tarts, ripping those
no
open.
There's no fan in the bathroom.
And he's putting like, it in, and then there's no sound. I'm just like, how does he, like, why is he so surprised when the door's open? Like, is he deaf? Is he that into that book? And then it dawns on you, because it's not a coincidence then that Butch runs over Marcellus, because Marcellus left. Marcellus was there. It may have been his Uzi, or it may have been fucking Vincent, but it's out there. He thinks that Marcellus has come back with the donuts. Grown men don't yell to each other through the fucking door. That's not happening. If you and I are hanging out and you're taking a shit, I'm not yelling to you in the bathroom. No. Now, when you come out, I know what you're doing. You've been in there 20 hours. I know you're either doing grout or you're taking a shit. So we don't yell to each other. And that's why when he opens the door, he's not expecting anybody but a big black man with fucking donuts on the counter. So he's expecting.
He's probably thinking, no way Butch is coming back.
And they're both thinking the same thing. He's like, so when he sees that it's not him, and then he realizes who it is, and what he said to him is, it dawns on him early. He's like, yep, for what I said at the bar, I'm fucking dead. Like, it was just, he knew it. Like, you can see it in his face. Yep, yep. It took me a while, but that's why Vincent Vega is not at all surprised, or is surprised, and isn't, like, coming out guns blazing, because he thinks it's just Marcellus. And that's why Butch sees him around the corner and hits him with the car, and he's holding donuts right in his hand.
Yeah.
That's why.
Yeah, it's just not, it wasn't a freak occurrence.
No,
like
no
when
coincidence.
You see in a movie, that's super coincidence. You just run into a person, you know, like in a huge city out of nowhere. Yeah, it's not like that. And I like every time you talk about how there's no throwaway, like it's a throwaway line, but it's not. But it's because it's something cool when you have somebody like Tarantino. I'm not saying he's the only one that does it. That they don't have to put it in your face. They don't have to, like, let's zoom in on this. Or let's do a flashback.
Yeah.
Let's do a flashback when she's pulling out the thing. Let's flashback to that scene when he asked him that question so that we can tell the audience, this is why we did that. Like, you get tired of that, you know? Yeah. And I think a lot of people miss it because it's such a fun movie.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
The movie is so fun that you're not always thinking about the little details.
And I guarantee there's a lot of people maybe listening who realized, even myself, for years thought it was just a coincidence. That, like, wow, what a coincidence. He's going in the same part of town as Marcellus Wallace getting donuts.
Yes.
But it's not a coincidence.
They're
at his home waiting.
Like, oh, of course he runs into Marcellus now, you know?
Yeah.
And they just chalk it up to a movie.
Yep. I hope there's people out there and they eventually find this and they're like, oh man, I'm a fucking idiot. Yes. You're a fucking idiot. Yes. You were wrong. You were wrong.
You've been
motherfucker.
Wrong
For 30 years. Vincent Vega's taking his shit while Marcellus Wallace is getting some motherfucking donuts. And this shit goes wrong.
But no, for real, man, that's super cool when you have a director, a writer who does that. That they don't have
absolutely.
To remind you constantly, you know?
Because you may not see it in the initial watching, but that's what makes their films so much. And what gives you joy is they're so rewatchable, and you watch them, you catch new details every time. Because once you know how the movie's going to go, you start to watch the movie, but you start to look past what's happening. You start to look in the back because you know what's happening. Like, I know what they're going to say, how it's going to go, but now I start to look for details that I missed.
Yes, years before I saw Travolta in the opening scene. I was not looking for him, and I didn't care at the beginning.
Now, even better, next time you watch it, if you listen closely, there is a moment where I believe it's, I think it's when Pumpkin or Honey Bunny says, I don't want to have to kill anybody, whatever. You can hear Jules and Vincent talking. Tarantino intentionally, with Salimeki, turns their volume up a little bit so you can hear them. Now, when you first watch the movie, you have no fucking clue what's going on. You're not paying attention to that. But it's there, so whenever you go back and watch it, it was always there. You're just focused on the thing. Yeah,
that was a lot of fun. I didn't catch it.
Yep.
Hell yeah, man.
Put some headphones on or something, like, and watch it. Like, even watch a YouTube clip of that opening scene, and you'll hear it a lot better in headphones. You'll be like, oh, shit. You'll hear
those
it.
Those are gifts, bro.
It's amazing. It's amazing
Yeah,
stuff.
Those are gifts for us fans.
They're Easter eggs that we didn't even know were fucking Easter eggs right away. You know what I mean? He's like, he's like, you'll get this a little bit later. Don't worry about it.
So fucking does it.
Yeah, but hey, all I do is copy paste. That's all I do. I just steal. Fuck you. Anyway, moving on to Butch. The question I want to know. What Butch does, because I'm going to talk about Butch next month. What Butch does for Marcellus, again, has been set up from the moment that they do the gold watch, and anyone who thought he was going to actually walk out of that pawn shop wasn't paying attention to the great fucking Christopher Walken over here, right? He didn't hide that piece of metal up his ass for 2 years for no reason. Mm-hmm. He's telling you a story about why he's got to earn the watch.
Uncomfortably. Yep.
Yes. But Butch has seen something that Marcellus never wants spoken, ever.
Yes.
He is extremely thankful that he came back for him, because he was dead. They were both going to take their turn. When they were done, they were going to both be killed. That's what's going to happen. These two are rapists and murderers. So they're going to rape Ving, or Marcellus. They're going to rape Butch. and then they're going to kill them both. And that's that. That's how that day was going to end for both of them.
Yeah.
So Marcellus.
Or turn him into gimps.
Get medieval on your ass. Unbelievable. Oh, Jesus. I know. We'll get to the gimp in December. Merry Christmas. he closes us out. But does Marcellus let Butch live? Because a few things are going to happen. The movie ends with Marcellus, with Butch on the motorcycle. Zed's dead right off. That's the linear end of Pulp Fiction. If you put everything in order by time, that's the end of the actual movie. It's the end of the middle of the movie. That's that. You know, that's the cool thing about this film. Marcellus is obviously focused on Zed. Zed is getting fucked up. Bad things are happening to Zed. But once that's happening, now he's got to call off this search. He has to somehow go back to Butch's apartment because that's where he thinks fucking Vincent still is.
Yeah.
He has no idea Butch has already killed Vincent. He may put that together. As we talked about, Vincent's been a very trusted man. He sent him to Amsterdam. He let him take care of business over there for 3 years for whatever reason it was. When he comes back, the first thing he says, hey, I want you to retrieve this very valuable case, and I want you to take care of my wife. Vincent's kind of one of his dudes. Knowing that the one man who knows about what happened in that basement, does he let Butch go officially? Does he call it off? Or does he just say we're good and just if they find him, they find him? What do you think? It's one of those interesting opening ending things because we in the moment we feel like Butch did the right thing. Good for Butch. And he did. But this is a man of power who does not want this stuff to get out. He has no idea what you've also done earlier in that day. Not only did you cheat him out of money by killing his fighter, you've killed his best man. And now you're the only person who knows what happened who's still alive in that basement.
Okay, so I feel like he really wanted to let him go because if he didn't want anybody to know, right, he would have just killed Butch right away. Take the shotgun, get rid of him. There's no possible way anyone will ever even hear about what happened here. He would have just shot him right after he shot Zed, right?
Exactly.
So I think he truly was grateful that he saved him. Incredibly grateful. And that's why he said, okay, but I think that once he finds out that Vincent is dead, I think what's going to happen is if he does see Butch again, he might actually really kill him versus he might have forgiven if he sees him 10 years later, you know?
If he ever shows his face in L.A., because his privileges have been revoked.
I think he still will let him go. I think he'll be fucking upset, you know? But he's, like, in the end of the day, Butch saved him.
Yeah. The fact that he saved him from rapists.
Yeah.
He's like, motherfucker.
When, again,
if I had him in rape, he'd be dead.
And the fact is that Butch saved him, knowing that they were there to kill him.
Yeah, yeah. You know? I mean, all his problems are gone. Butch walks out. Not necessarily, because the hit is still out there. So, you know, who knows who's going to call it off, you know?
Yeah.
But technically, Butch gets away scot-free. You know, he hasn't to worry about it all. He knows that Zed and his buddy, they're going to kill him. So.
Yeah, oh, that what now?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, exactly.
But I do think he lets him go. Even after he finds out about Vincent, I think he'll get upset. But he's like, well, I better definitely not see this motherfucker again.
Yeah.
Because I'm not going to be, you know, even thinking about it. Like, oh, if I go to China, I accidentally see him, I'm still going to kill him. Yeah. That's what I think.
Now we're going to talk about his wife, Mia. Good old Mia Wallace. The honey trap. The honey trap of the entire film. No female is more dangerous, and I don't mean that as if the brides are dangerous, but no female is really a more hidden danger than Mia Wallace. So we've kind of discussed how we think he met her. Here's a few things that I like that we don't know. I like that it's alluded to that Mia may or may not be a bit promiscuous. I think she was going to sleep with Vincent that night. Things happened. There was sparks. There was something she hadn't felt in a long time, and Vincent was the one who brought that out. He was different than who she's used to. She could see a kindred spirit in him. She really liked, there was just something about him. He was unique and different than Marcellus. Not that he was better, but there was something about him that really drew her to him. Because when they go back, music, drinks, listen, she's getting some liquid courage to do what she wants to do. I think Vincent had an idea that was the case as well.
Yeah.
That's why he was like, I'm gonna do the real quick play the skin flute and get the fuck out of here, because otherwise I'm a dead man, because I think he was really into her too. He was really into her, and if anyone has any question about that, it's the dip, it's the dance their way into the house punching the thing, dip, and then look at each other where it get. I mean, I remember the first time I watched, I thought, oh shit, they're gonna kiss. Like, I really thought that was coming next. And then she was like, oh, I don't know what that was. And you're kind of like, you do it, bitch. You knew exactly what that was. But that's just like music, drinks. Like, she wanted to, you know, she still needed a little bit more liquid courage to see what was going to go on.
It would have been a different situation for chapter 3.
Oh boy. Butch wouldn't have been the one to kill them. Zed wouldn't have got the medieval on his ass. I can tell you that right now. What I also like is we don't know what Marcellus is like. We have no idea if he's got a side piece. I love, you know, because, you know, you watch some of the Scorsese films, you watch Goodfellas, they all have side pieces. You know what I mean? Like, that just seemed to be like the way the life is. But it also seems to become a cliche, right? Like, it seems to be like, if you're going to watch a movie, one of the fucking gangsters, he's got a wife, and then he's got a side piece. You know, it's always that kind of, like, thing happening. And so we don't know anything about ourselves. We don't know why he's so cold when he's around her. We don't know why they're just kind of like, you know, like, they don't speak at all. Not at all. Even when they're at that breakfast, when he's calling about the wolf, they don't say a word to each other.
Yeah.
So, you know, and they're only in two scenes together. At the pool, when he's calling about the wolf, or to get the wolf, basically, without him knowing he's getting the wolf. And then when they're realizing the Butch has betrayed them and jumped out. And she's in there, so, oh, I never did ask thank you for dinner the other night. Like, basically blows him off. Like, that brought up some, like, middle school trauma. It's like some girl who talks to you on the side, but then when she's with her friend, she blows you up like she doesn't know who the fuck you are. You're kind of like, what? The other day, you thought I was the greatest thing in the world, and now you're on your friends. I'm like, just Scott from science class? Like, who the fuck you? You know? That was exactly what that was kind of like. She was kind of like, she liked him all night long, and then all of a sudden, because some things happened, and she's embarrassed, she's kind of like, oh, I never did thank you for dinner. Yeah, exactly. Like,
the tea,
you motherfucker. Exactly. You motherfucker. Exactly. Urban hilarious because how's your chest? I'm just kidding with you.
Pulls out a marker.
Exactly. And there's the rumors. What do we think about Mia? Is Mia? Does Marcellus think Mia has a reputation or could possibly be a temptress? And even if it's just because she likes the attention, because he sends Vincent. And he sends Vincent because he knows Vincent is loyal. At least he believes he's loyal.
How long was Vincent in Amsterdam?
3 years. He was gone 3 years. So that's when we start the movie, once they get out of the car, and he's asking about Mia because now he's been asked to take her. So he's trying to get some information. He knows nothing about her.
So Mia has been in the picture 3 or less years that we know.
Agreed.
Right? So he could have met her 3 years ago and married her. In 2 months, for all we know. We don't know when they got married. I don't think that necessarily she is promiscuous, but I think that she's very flirtatious. And they know that, you know, when they say that at the place. Because, have you met Mia? So it's possible that the Rock... what's the name of the guy?
Tony Rocky Hora. Tony Rockamora is his real name, but they call him Tony Rocky Hora.
Yeah. Like when Jules is like, I wouldn't go as far as call that, you know, going fat.
Going fat.
You
know, he's Simone. What are you going to do?
He's got a weight problem.
Brother Simone.
Yeah. Like the way he says it. Like, come on, man. Like, you know. I like that so much, man. Because it's like, they have these conversations that, like, we could be having in the middle of the day. Like, you're going somewhere.
Yes.
And it's like, come on, man. Really? Like, he's Simone. Yeah. He can't help it, you know? Like. It's like if he was like, you know, he's morbidly obese. He's like, no, man, come on. I don't want to call him that.
He likes a couple of Twinkies before bed. Come on. Let him have it. He lost his ma. Give him a break.
But I feel like I wonder if that was one incident, right? Like a really bad incident at that. So a lot of times women do this too, not just guys, where somebody, let's say, it's unfaithful to them. They blame it on the other person, not their spouse.
Yes.
So if something happened, they go after the guy. So if it's only happened once, then maybe Marcellus is like, no, you know, she's not like that, you know? Now, if he does think that she is like that, then maybe that's why he chooses Vincent.
That's what I was going to say. I think even now that I'm talking to you, I think what a lot of us have forgot is Marcellus felt the need to have someone kind of watch her and take her out while he was out of town.
Yes.
So maybe it's a test. Maybe it's a double test. Maybe it's a loyalty test for both of them. Maybe he's trying to see, is my man Vincent still the man I thought he was when he went to Amsterdam? Or is my wife also, if my wife sleeps with Vincent, I'm killing them both.
Yeah.
They're both going to die.
Yeah.
And you know what I mean? Yeah. It's almost kind of like, if I come back from Florida and someone else's car is parked in my garage. Let me tell you what.
I'm checking the cameras.
You're gonna wish I was just gonna get medieval.
No, like I feel like
you're both going down.
I feel like he probably thinks if he does worry about her, like let's say he doesn't trust her, he's like,
oh, he does. I think he does because he felt the need. Like, yeah. I've never left town and asked a buddy to take my wife out, ever. You know what I mean? Like she can go out with her friends, but I've never been like, hey.
Because now I'm thinking that he believes that Vincent is either too loyal or too afraid or both to actually do it. Which actually, I think that Vincent was going to try to leave. For them to have
100%, yeah.
For them to have slept together, she would have had to really work hard at it. Yeah. I'm not saying that it wouldn't have happened, but it would have happened more because of her, if that makes sense, you know? Like, let's say that she didn't OD, he still did, you know, he tried to do his thing in the bathroom, he comes out, he's like, hey, I'm good to go, but she could have still put a lot of work in there, and it still could have happened.
And she could have played the whole, hey, I'm the boss's wife, if you don't, I'm going to tell him you did these things. Like the best thing that may have happened, I didn't think this the original, but maybe the best thing that ever happened, she OD'd, because... He was really like without him knowing, he was really upset.
She wanted to be petty. She could have threatened, like, to say that he actually did something. Even if you leave, I'll tell him that.
No, I'm not saying she would have. I'm saying she could have. Right? So I don't want any of the female listeners to think, don't misconstrue. All right. Like, look, you know, because people take things as if you're like, you're trying to, oh, fuck these women kind of thing. She's a whore. No, I'm just saying she's the boss's wife. She has used her power. She can. She has the ability. Jules is telling her to go fuck herself. Yeah. You know what I mean? Like, Jules doesn't even. Vincent's not that guy. Vincent's going to do whatever he can to appease her. You know what I mean? He's like, I don't want to get in any trouble. You know, so Jules would be like, go fuck yourself. You know what I mean? Like, he's not putting up with that shit. You know what I mean?
For real.
He's not twisting. He's not twisting for nothing.
He probably won't even walk into the door. He's like, all right, probably get out the car, go.
Bitch, you got legs.
For real.
Oh, goddamn.
Yeah. He would have never asked to try her milkshake or nothing like that.
No. No.
But it sounds kind of funny saying it like that.
Yeah. I think Marcellus has maybe he has some inclination. There's some things there. Maybe he's got something on the side. Maybe he's not too worried about. I don't know.
Well, the reason I definitely felt
the need to send someone over to basically babysit her and watch her to make sure she didn't get herself into trouble.
Because they haven't known each other that long. It could be 3 whole years, but it could be less.
They got married very, very fast.
Yeah.
But that brings me to something we can talk about as well. What really happened with Tony and Marcellus? Originally, I thought she was being a little bit coy. Maybe something happened. But the way she does respond, and it's, you know, obviously this is the acting choice that Uma gives. I don't get the sense that something happened with her and Tony. Did Tony Rocky ever touch her feet? Or is that just, like you said, it's like kind of like something else has happened, right? Like, I think, this is just me and I'm going to ask you. I think maybe something else happened with someone else. There was another little moment, right? And Marcellus had to handle.
Between Mia?
Between me and someone else, and Marcellus had to handle that. And then when they find out that he threw Tony Rocky Horror off a building, it kind of goes, I bet it has something to do with Mia. Like, because if no one else knows, because she says, the only reason anyone knows is Tony and Marcellus know why that happened. And that's what she says, when you scams get together. So what happens is they've taken some information that they've have a good idea has happened before.
Yeah.
And now they're tying it into this situation with Tony and Marcellus. And it grabs legs quickly because if you steal and someone sees you steal something from your job, right? They don't say nothing. But they know, they're like, every now and then he takes a little extra meat home. We know this, right? And then something else happens. And because they already know that you've done this, it's not a far stretch for people to go, if he's doing this, he probably did this too. You know, so I think that's kind of what happened with Mia here. Something happened that never is talked about in the film, but that the rest of the group knows and Vincent doesn't. Which is why when they say, have you seen me? Like, there's some people have made some mistakes, and maybe Mia's let him get a little too close and get a little too much attention. And Marcellus put them in check. And then Tony gets thrown off a building, which no one has any idea why. So what's the most logical conclusion?
It has to do with Mia.
It's fucking Mia. Yeah.
Fucking Mia.
Fucking Mia Wallace. The honey trap, baby. Stay the fuck away from Mia Wallace.
I like that that theory actually a lot, because I do believe her. The way she responds to, like you said, the acting choice, it doesn't sound like, because with actors, even in a film, you can tell when they're lying.
Exactly. Yeah. Even though they're lying completely, but they, yeah, exactly.
Yeah, you remember negotiate?
Because she goes, did it involve the F word? No. You know what I mean? Because she was even like...
One of the lines that I always, me and my brothers always go back to is, you remember the negotiator with Paul Giamatti when Samuel Jackson is talking about how you can tell somebody can lie? And then the guy says something and Paul Giamatti's like, that's the fucking lie. The way he just jumps and say it. Like, yo, you just fucking... What, are you a fucking expert now? But yeah, anyway, continue from my back.
This is all hypothetical, as you said, we're speculating. Hey. Speculation. But yeah, it just lends a little credence to what the subtext is in the film, is why some of these things happen. Is because I don't think she did anything with Return to Rocky Horror. But I think everyone else thinks she did because of something else that has happened before, which is why Marcellus is sending someone out with her.
Yeah, because people do make up shit.
Because either he doesn't trust some other people, or he doesn't trust her to be alone by herself while he's gone, especially in Florida.
I never got the sense, and again, all hypothetical, I never got the sense that he was testing Vincent. I never felt that he was. I'm not saying that he's not, mm-hmm. but I always felt like he felt safer sending him. Of course, mm-hmm. he'll be ready to kill him if something happened. But maybe the test was also on her, like you said, you know, that's.
Yeah.
But mm-hmm. I feel like it's more likely that he was testing her than testing Vincent. I just feel mm-hmm. like based on AI, I feel like really there's something like he knows that Vincent is afraid of him. I think he does believe in his loyalty. Mm-hmm. I think he believes in it. But I think, like, yeah, he would never turn on me kind of thing. Like, you know, yeah. like.
And he was loyal to him to the end.
Yeah. Sounds like a dog thing. Like, this dog yeah. would never turn on me, you know? Like.
And he didn't. You know, that's the two things you can say about Vincent and Vic Vega. They were loyal people.
Yes.
They never turned. They never betrayed. They could have, but they didn't. So. But now they're dead. Probably. So how'd that work out for you, Mr. Ron? It's got to go.
That's crazy.
Now, the one thing that has always perplexed me, and even to this day, why the fuck does a man like Marcellus Wallace choose three deadbeat white slackers and this poor black guy who gets his fucking head blown off later to retrieve a case with a priceless item in it? Because when they go to get this case and he's like, well, we got in the best intentions. Why would he decide that these are the four guys? He wants getting whatever is inside that case. That seems like the biggest error in judgment of all time from Marcellus Wallace. Is fucking Brett, Flock of Seagulls, Marvin, and...
Jerry Seinfeld?
Jerry Seinfeld. The Jerry Seinfeld lookalike in the fucking can to fucking hold on to this case of valuables. So those guys, as Brett's trying to explain, which is still I love about this, is it's very vague. They know the particulars. They don't need to tell us all. I sometimes don't need... Certain movies require you to have the dialogue service the plot so we understand what's going on. Yeah. If you're in a spy movie, you're going to need the guys to kind of talk about why they're spying. We just can't guess. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, everyone gets up out of the theater and walks away. We have no idea what's going on. Like, why the fuck does he got a gun in his shoe? Who's this guy over here? Why are we playing cards? What's happening here? You know, you need to know what's going on.
Cue in Travolta, man.
Exactly. But in this, we have no idea why these four fucking look like college kids have decided to not return the case that they found, retrieved, or picked up for Marcellus Wallace. Because when he says to him, he goes, well, you know, when we got into this with the best intentions.
So
why is Marcellus... So Brett and his three ne'er-do-wells who are all dead,
yeah.
at some point were hired or got into business with Marcellus Wallace to get this case with whatever the fuck is in it and give it to Marcellus. And when they don't show up with it and they still have it, that's when their inside man of this group, Marvin, kind of says, this is where we're at. This is all just kind of subtext of the film because Marvin's the one who unlocks the door and opens the door for him. And that's why Marvin's about to give them up. And that's when he says, I don't remember asking you a goddamn thing.
What a delivery on that
cat. I wish I could do that to some of my students when they just decide to talk in the middle of class. I don't remember asking you a goddamn thing.
So fucking good, bro. Damn.
So Marvin's the one who gives them up. And then they show up and they're there to retrieve the case and, you know, remove them from the equation.
Yeah.
And this is why Marvin, you know, and because that's what he says, even our guy. So obviously Marvin is still loyal to Marcellus in that part because that's what, you know, everything, it's in the movie, folks. If you just listen to the dialogue, they're telling you what's happening. But we don't know why Marcellus Wallace, who I have already just spent like an hour talking about how he's a genius. He's this. But clearly, not always making smart decisions, trusting some lily white college boys to fucking hold on to a case. So what do you think? What the fuck? Why are these the guys that he has decided to put such a valuable in their trust and care?
So this case, was it originally Marcellus or he acquired it from somebody else?
That is also part of the mystery. It's either was his originally, was lost or taken, and they got it back for him, or they told Marcellus about it and were going to give it to him and in return for some cash that they probably already got. He probably paid them for it, and they never delivered, and that's why they show up to retrieve it.
I mean, it makes it more believable to me if it was not his originally, or they stole it from him. Because if it wasn't his originally, he could have found out through Marvin, right? And then he's like, okay, or maybe it was kept somewhere where, you know, a big bald motherfucker couldn't walk in, or Jules. And maybe it was because of their look that they could retrieve it. You know, we don't know where Brad works or whatever. But that's the only thing that will make it more believable based on what you said, because you've talked about this before. Why hire these?
Why these guys?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, like, why are these the guys you got into business with?
Unless Brad was actually, the big brain on Brad. Maybe he was a pretty smart guy. Who he's the one that had the silly mother efforts around him. You know what I'm saying? And maybe they trusted Brad. I don't know. It's a tough one, bro. It's a tough one.
It's a great moment in the film because, you know, it does show that people make mistakes and you can trust the wrong people. But it's just kind of like whenever I start to think back on it, you go, why are those the fucking guys that he trusted with this fucking valuable case beyond value?
Yeah.
You just kind of go,
You know, like you said, when he says they got into it with good intention, it implies that a deal was made or something like that.
Yeah. You know? Yeah. And they fucked up. And now look how that turned out for him. Didn't even get to finish his Kahuna Burger or finish his Sprite. Look at the big brains on Brad. It's all over the fucking floor, buddy.
I mean, one of the most quoted scenes.
Yeah.
Right?
Okay.
Nah, man. I'm pretty fucking far from okay.
What now?
What now? Let me tell you what now. I'ma call a couple of hard pipe-hitting niggas to go to work on the homes here with a pair of pliers and a blowtorch. You hear me talking, hillbilly boy? I ain't through with you by damn sight. I'ma get medieval on your ass.
I mean, what now between me and you?
Oh, that what now? I tell you what now between me and you. There is no me in you. Not no more.
So we cool?
Yeah, we cool. Two things. Don't tell nobody about this. This shit is between me, you, and Mr. Soon to be living the rest of his short-ass life in agonizing pain, rapist, yeah. It ain't nobody else's business. Two, you leave town tonight, right now. And when you're gone, you stay gone, or you be gone. You lost all your LA privileges, deal?
Deal.
Get your ass out of here.
And now, AI clinical diagnosis.
All right, now, once again, we are going to turn to AI. As I asked it to clinically diagnose Marcellus based on the psychological evaluation it performed on him earlier. So without further ado, here is Marcellus Wallace's clinical diagnosis. He has been diagnosed with antisocial personality disorder. Marcellus Wallace meets criteria for antisocial personality disorder based on his presentation of a pervasive pattern of disregard for and violation of the rights of others that has persisted into adulthood. Specifically, he exhibits the following: failure to conform to social norms with respect to lawful behaviors, as evidence by his involvement in organized crime activities, including drug distribution, money laundering, and contract killing. Deceitfulness, as indicated by his manipulation of others through threats and intimidation. Impulsivity and failure to plan ahead, suggested by his violent outbursts and vengeful acts. Irritability and aggressiveness, displayed in his physical assaults on those who cross him. Reckless disregard for safety of self and others without remorse, shown in his willingness to inflict severe violence. Consistent irresponsibility, evident in his lack of traditional employment and criminal lifestyle. And lastly, lack of remorse for wrongdoing or harm caused to others. In summary, his antisocial behaviors do not appear attributed to another mental disorder, and he is over the age of 18. Marcellus also exhibits narcissistic and Machiavellian personality traits that further enable his criminal activities and exploitation of others for power and profit. Treatment would focus on behavioral modification to reduce criminality and aggression, as well as addressing underlying narcissistic dynamics. Prognosis for significant change is poor, given the ingrained nature of his antisocial pathology. Strict external controls on behavior are recommended. AI did not see Mr. Marcellus Wallace changing his tune even after the brutal raping in Zeds, which I think would only add to his criminality. Yeah. I think what happens to him at Zeds pushes him further down the rabbit hole of how the fuck dare you cross me mentality.
Yeah, yeah. The only thing that shows is that he does have ability, I don't know if remorse, but something, because if he had no feeling at all, he would have killed Butch right then and there, right?
Yes, no, agreed. He did show a moment of at least appreciation.
Yeah, there you go.
He was able to at least look at Butch and go, you know what? I know that even an hour earlier or less, I don't know how long they were knocked out for, but even 30 minutes ago, you and I were going to kill each other.
Yeah.
One of us was dying, and you could have left me here. And he's probably thinking, I would have probably left you. Roles are reversed.
Wow.
Actually, roles are reversed. Marcellus goes in and kills everyone in the room, including Butch. He does not care that he's being raped. He kills Butch. He kills Zed. He kills Maynard. They all, and the Gimp, they all die that day. So I think he knows that too. He goes, I would not have returned to help you. I would have returned
not to save,
to kill you.
That's big.
But Butch turns, and Butch has every reason to kill him. I mean, he's pants around his ankles, ass cheeks akimbo, bent over a fucking pommel horse, which I've talked about. Where they got a pommel horse, still don't know. What weird basement fucking pawn shop. They've got a gymnastic pommel horse in a fucking rape dungeon. Very bizarre. But if Butch wanted to, he could have gone in there and beheaded him.
Yeah.
Could have killed Maynard, quickly killed Zed, and then done away with fucking Marcellus.
Yeah.
Roles reversed. Marcellus is killing everyone in that room. No one.
That's a great. I'm glad you brought that up. That's big, man. I think that also maybe him thinking about that, like, damn, I wouldn't have come here to save this guy. That's huge.
Yeah. Like I said, he goes upstairs, gets whatever weapons he can find, and he's killing everybody. Because, you know, that the man's betrayed him, so he's killing them all. Him getting picked first is maybe the reason that Butch is still alive. Because otherwise, reversal of fortune, there's not a soul alive, you know. So AI's not too far off.
Yeah.
The ball gag scene, I still think, is the most shocking scene Tarantino's ever made. Nothing prepares. Even when you see it again, you're like, fuck. I got to watch this to get to the next part. You know what I mean? Like, this is...
Because even then, I don't think anybody would have ever expected that he would have done that, that he would have shown that.
The only person who went into that scene thinking that when that door was being pushed open that he was being raped is some kind of sick degenerate. You know what? Because of that scene, maybe now today's audiences would expect it, because it kind of ups the ante of film as we move down the film.
And let me rephrase, not to see it, you know, like he showed it because it's possible.
But who's expecting that that's what's happening, especially because it's male, right? Like if it's a female, what's happening, unfortunately.
But Butch kind of had an idea, right?
I don't think Butch knew. I think Butch was like, everyone was kind of like, because you've noticed, it becomes a horror moment when he puts his hand up.
Well, I thought Butch had an idea because Butch has seen the Gimp and the gag. Like that's kind of... strange stuff.
You might be right. He may be like,
Like maybe he was like, damn, man, what if they're not just beating him up? you know?
But the other interesting thing, though, it's the noises that Tarantino has the guys who play Maynard and Zed make that don't necessarily sound like you would think of sex. Because it does sound like, yeah, come on, motherfucker. Like, it sounds like they're fucking wailing on him. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I mean, yeah.
And they are, but oh, we didn't know it was that kind of wailing. It's a whole different. Oh, did not know that was what was happening when that door gets pushed open.
This is crazy.
And, you know, people have seen it since. Sometimes, like, I've told the story before, but my daughter saw it like 3 years ago at Thanksgiving. And she walked in to her boyfriend's house with him, with her parents. They're watching this. And it's the scene. That's the scene she walks in on. Jesus. And so she has no idea what's going on. It's, you know, and she texts me. She knows it's my favorite movie. She texts me. She goes, "You're a sick motherfucker." And I said, "Whoa, you're right. But you haven't seen the context of the film. This isn't just some kind of rape fantasy going on. This isn't. There's more than just a big black man being raped by two fucking racist perverts. There's more to it. You have to see the whole film. There's a whole story about a watch up an ass. Like, you know?
It's like, there's these memes about, like, wrestling fans that, like, I don't watch wrestling, no, but I used to. And they're like, every time my girl walks in when I'm watching wrestling, and it's like the weirdest thing movie happening. Like, oh, come on. It's never a cool moment with The Rock or Stone Cold.
So I think AI, you know, nails it on the head. He's definitely got antisocial personality disorder. And I think it's only made worse by Zed and Maynard's pawn shop basement.
And the whole narcissistic thing, it's like, for real, it's crazy. I agree.
So there you go. Another wisdom check from AI. AI once again coming in clutch with our analysis, with our clinical diagnosis.
He's dead. If you need someone to go to court, I will be glad to help, okay? That guy was a drunken maniac. He hit you, and then he crashed into that car.
Who?
Him.
I'll be damned.
Now we're going to discuss Mr. Ving Rhames' portrayal of Marcellus Wallace, but first we'd like to discuss who else was up for the role. Now, there are quite a few highly named black gentlemen. The first three were the top three choices he had. Number one was Ving Rhames. Coming in second was Samuel L. Jackson. And his third major person that he would have, the top three choices, was also then Mr. Charles Dutton. Also making the list for possibilities of playing Marcellus Wallace are Ken Foran, Sid Haig, James Englehart, Bernie Casey, the recently deceased, but at the time you listened to this, been about 2 months, Carl Weathers.
Wow.
May he rest in peace. Roger E. Mosley, Max Julian, which if you know that name, it's from True Romance, from the Mac. Talks about Max Julian in that movie. Tony Todd, John D. Black, Bill Duke. If you don't know Bill Duke's the man shaving his face right near Carl Weathers in the amazing movie Predator. And then, of course, Delroy Lindo was also announced.
Ooh, I like.
And that was young. That was a young Delroy, too. So, yeah. You know, actually, he's probably around the same age at the time as also Ving Rhames was. But some really good choices in there for also possible, you know, people to be Marcellus. But I think Ving Rhames and that voice knocks it out of the park.
The worst choice by far is Samuel Jackson, of course.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. I'm kidding, obviously.
No, because Sam, we got Sam in the role he needs to be in.
Exactly.
Yeah, 100%. I can see Carl Weathers. I can see Bill Duke in it. I can see Delroy Lindo in it as well. I could see a couple of those.
Delroy Lindo would be the one, just because I like him a lot.
Yeah.
I would love to have seen him, because I like the way he talks. You know, like,
Bill Duke is also bald. He's about the same complexion as Ving Rhames, but he's got that look. You know what I'm talking about? Like, he's got that look. His face has just got that look. it kind of freaks you out.
Is that Bill Duke the one that you said was in True Romance? Where's Bill
Duke? No, Bill Duke, Max Julian. Max Julian's in the Mac, and that's the movie watching, Drexel's watching. And then he and then Clarence have a conversation about. But Bill Duke is the guy who shaves his face. He's like the buddy of...
Predator.
Like, I'm having some fun. I'm having some fun. Yeah. Good old Bill Duke. But yeah, so he would have been good too. But he's got a look to him too. Just his eyes and just how white they are. Just there's something about Bill Duke that would have been a good scary villain as well. But I like Ving.
Yeah.
To me, it's one of his best.
No, that when Tarantino does these things, it's like sometimes it's hard to imagine other people. It's like,
I know.
Yeah, I can think of, I would love to see Delroy Lindo, like you said, Carl Weathers, to see what they would have done, you know, because Tarantino, like you always talk about this, and I love when you do, you talk about the performances that he gets out of people. Mm-hmm. Like, I'm like, man, I would like, if this is really his last movie or just on the TV shows, I want to see like a bunch of people that I would never imagine working with him. Just to see what the fuck would happen.
I know. You know? He's able to pull these amazing performances out of these actors. They always give one of their best performances. You know, like Leonardo DiCaprio is spectacular. He's got a catalog of amazing performances throughout his career. The two of them have got to be the Tarantino ones. You know, I know he does a lot of Scorsese, and he's great in a lot of them, but man, his two from Tarantino are
top
notch. Yeah, you know, Brad Pitt, same way. Brad Pitt, amazing catalog, but you look at his two, and you're like, Jesus, you know? I mean, he won an award for one, so.
For real? Like, how many Oscar nominations did Brad Pitt get before this?
Oh, he's got a few, but the only one he won for, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Okay, I didn't know he got, but still, like, you look at Robert Forster getting nominated, he didn't win, but still, it's like, it's an amazing performance. And Jackie Brown, I mean, sorry, Pam Grier should have gotten nominated. I know you said this, but...
I know. But what Ving did bring is, the fact that, if those of you don't know, his soul was not sucked out the back of his neck. He had a scar or birthmark from shaving his head. And he nicked it, and it just didn't look good. And he was self-conscious about it. And he knew that at the beginning of the movie, his back of his head is being shown.
Yeah.
You only see him for the first part of the first third of the movie with the back of his head.
You know, AI said he was insecure.
He was, and he was right. And so he put that Band-Aid on it, and there's just something about it. It's just, I don't know what. But I remember when I saw it in the theater, it just added something. It's kind of like, it's what Bob says about the old man in Minis. Just add something. That's what it was. You know what I mean? It's just like, it just adds something to his neck to have that. It added to a lore of him. You just wanted to know more. I don't know. There was just something about the band in the back of his neck. It was like, it was like an eye patch. It was just something that was now a trait to him. And then his voice. His deep, it's like James Earl Jones being fucking Darth Vader. It's just that voice is mesmerizing, iconic. That's why Arby's has used him for the last, God, almost 10 years to be the fucking, we got the meats. It's like, because it's just the voice, it works. It's a good voice. Like his deep bass voice, along with just his look, it was a trademark. And I think it adds it. Some of these other guys we talked about, Delroy Lindo would have that voice. You know, Carl Weathers would bring something to it as well, but not.
There's some mix of with Ving Rhames. It's like it's deep, but it's like smooth and cool.
Motherfucker! They just the way he says things. You know, like motherfucker.
Yeah, there's like a melody to it.
Oh, you happy now, motherfucker? Have. Like, there is a melody to the voice. Yeah. It's like it's making love to your ears while he's killing you. You know what I mean? You're kind of like, man, he's lulling me in. He's fucking stabbing me in the face.
The way he says the dialogue in the basement when he says something like, "I'm gonna mess it up. Sorry to the church." He says something like, "Soon to be rapist here." Like, this is the way he drags, like the way he flows. Like, he just delivers the line.
Yeah, right. This is the way he delivers it. I don't know anyone else could knock it out the park.
Yeah, it would have been a different character. To be honest, these other actors, the ones that you like, the ones that I like, would have been a different character.
Mm-hmm.
As far as the sound, they're not going to have that delivery the way he does.
And they might bring their voice up loud. Like, he rarely yells, you know, like he's always calm. You know, even when Jules goes, "You happy now, motherfucker?" Like, he's just come. Yeah, he just has this delivery, just the way about him that he's a cool motherfucker. Like, we know he's a bad guy, but he's a bad guy. You're kind of like, damn, that is a cold-ass motherfucker.
Yeah.
And it brings a sense of, because of the calmness, because of the sound of the voice, because of the way he looks, it does bring a bit of menace without having to go over the top. Yeah. Doesn't have to do anything special. The best thing, whether it was Sally or whoever came up with the idea, but when they have him rise up like a rattlesnake with the shotgun after being raped, it shows that we know what just happened to him. This man has never been put in a position like this before. But he is rising from those ashes and he is going to strike furiously. You instantly remember, okay, yeah, we just saw him degraded and him at a low point. Don't for one second get yourself confused that he's now weak.
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, you may have awoken a beast inside him now.
Yeah.
All I know is Marcellus Wallace fucking waylays LA after this. Like, he has just scorched earth with everybody. So, and he's just the ultimate badass motherfucker. I know Jules gets, and he deserves the wallet. But that briefcase on the inside, it's lights. It's gold lights. I'm a badass motherfucker.
Interesting, yeah.
Before we close it out, where does Marcellus Wallace, the character from Mr. Ving Rhames, rate for you in his body of work? And I know that, unfortunately, he had some good roles in the 90s, and he's been in the Mission Impossible films with Tom Cruise.
Yeah.
But he doesn't get used as well as he probably could. So for you, is there another role that trumps this as maybe one of his best, even though it is in a supporting role?
That's a hard motherfucking question. Trump's this makes me think, like, if it's better than this. I think this is more memorable to me. When I think of him, it's always going to be Marcellus Wallace. However, I enjoyed him very much in Out of Sight. He was so likable.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
And, you know, have a soft spot for anything Elmer Leonard related, which to me, even Tarantino's Elmer Leonard related, you know? So to me, that's a role that I like. He's more in the movie more. I get to hear him talk more.
Yeah.
But memorable and best role for me, even though he's not on screen the whole time, this is just, it's iconic. Like, Marcellus Wallace gets talked about even when he's not on a scene, even for people who quote Tarantino. Even people who don't even know about the universe. they're like, what does Marcellus Wallace look? They don't even know. They don't even know who he is.
He's such a bad motherfucker. Other people use him as an example of, you want to talk bad about him, you're going to die. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, so you look like a bitch.
So it's hard to think, and I can't think of all the stuff he's done. I know I've seen him in a lot of stuff. It's like you said, though, they might not have used him the way that he deserved, and he didn't always get the biggest roles, you know? But I've always liked him.
He's Cobra Knuckles in Lilo and Stitch. That's good. My kids loved it. I loved him being in the movie. I was like, he's kind of dressed up like Pulp Fiction in it. I was like, oh, that's cool as fuck. Yep.
As soon as I saw that movie, I was like, that has to be him. Let me look. I had to be that B. But yeah, so I would say this one is, I don't think another one trumps it for me. This is just incredibly memorable. Almost everybody here is memorable. There's no wasted characters.
All right, my friend, let's close this out with your final four questions.
Let's ask our guest some fucking questions. Number one.
What was your favorite line of dialogue spoken by Marcellus Wallace?
So, you know how I always say, that's a hard motherfucking question. It comes from, that's a hard motherfucking fact of life. That's where I get it from. And it's a... This is actually the first episode that I wrote stuff down. I've never written anything down. That's probably why I didn't make the cut, because it feels me, so I'm trying. So it goes, I like when he goes, motherfuckers who thought their ass would age like wine. If you mean in terms of vinegar, it does. If you mean it gets better with age, it don't. I just love that part. But as far as one line, yeah, that's a hard motherfucking fact of life. I always love saying that.
That speech that he gives Butch, that goes for a lot. That's almost like a come to Jesus moment for everybody. You're like, look, you think you're getting older, you're going to get better? I'm going to tell you something. Your old timer's day is over. It ain't happening. I love that as your first answer.
Number two.
What was your favorite moment or scene involving Marcellus Wallace? And boy, some of his are tough.
Yeah, they're tough. I wrote something down too. So this is when they're bringing in the wolf. And the reason I love it and it's my favorite moment is because Samuel Jackson, who is like, he inspires cool. He's freaking out in that scene on the phone. So everything he says, and when he's like, you ain't got no problem, Jules. I'm on the motherfucker. Go back in there and chill them out. And wait for the wolf. We should be coming directly. I just love how he says,
oh, you shouting the wolf? Oh, you happy now, motherfucker?
That's all you have to say.
Fucking love. The best.
There was a great meme, which is probably one of my favorite memes, when it's this guy trying to, like, feed a baby. And then you see it? And then the baby doesn't want the food. And then you see like, I don't know, the dad is like, it's an airplane. And then you see Samuel Jackson, that's all you have to say.
Number three.
Now, where does Marcellus Wallace rank for you in the pantheon of the vast Tarantino verse of characters?
I don't have a good answer for that. I want to tell you straight up. There's no good answer there. Just like I said earlier, I feel like there's no waste of characters really when it comes to Tarantino. I feel like Elmo Leonard was like that too. There's so many different characters, just like Tarantino does. He do sometimes it would spread across the universe, you know? So every side character that could be there for a minute is memorable in some way, or somebody, it'll be important to someone. I mean, there's characters that say no lines that are memorable, like the Gimp, you know? So picking where it ranks, I don't know, but I can tell you when I was listening to your Watch This or Die episode, I thought of him as one of the top villains, you know, because again, to me, I was like, wow, this is makes me think of what he did with Bill in a way, you know, just setting up a villain. You don't see them. You hear about them. You hear the voice, but you don't see the face. So I think he's extremely cool. But as far as like ranking them, I don't fucking know, man. It's tough. It's tough. Because it's so
probably many, fine.
Yeah, there's a lot of like favorite characters that don't necessarily mean they're the best characters. I think there's a big difference between favorite and best, you know? So
he may just be one of those ones that kind of gets underrated. You know, we take him for granted. We forget how awesome he truly is in that film because of how many awesome people there have been who've come after him. You know, but sometimes you forget about Marcellus Wallace, yet he's always there in the tip of your tongue.
Memorable and powerful motherfucker and cool. Fucking cool and cold as ice.
Number four.
Now, if you had to write his dating bio for whatever dating app he chose, what would you say? What would be your little blurb? How would you get them ladies in there? Or fellas, right? You know, we're not gonna whatever. Ving Rhames. Marcellus Wallace gets who he wants, all right? Let's be honest.
All right, let me start off. Marcellus Wallace. I'm a quiet motherfucker. A man who enjoys luxury, cigars, and wine. I'm a businessman, but don't ask me about my business. I do not give foot massages. I don't dance. And if any of you ladies try to play with my booty hole, I'm going to get medieval on you.
Oh, fantastic. That's the best one yet.
I'm trying to get back on season four, you know what I'm saying?
Love it. Love it. Fan fucking tastic.
I'm coming season four, baby, you know.
And that's a wrap on this edition of Character Study. I would once again like to thank my special guest, Mr. Frank Hannon, co-host of the Bachata Talk podcast, for joining me today. I had an absolute blast discussing the intricacies of what makes Marcellus Wallace tick. Now, you can find the link to the Bachata Talk podcast and the show's socials in our show notes. And as always, you can become a member of the Church of Tarantino by following us on all of our socials. Those links can be found in the show notes as well. Now, if you'd be so kind and take a moment to like, review, subscribe, and follow us, the Church would greatly appreciate it, as it will help other fellow Tarantino fans like yourself find the show. So be sure to join me again next week for our latest series, Inglourious Blue Balls, as myself and my co-host Sean Wheeler will be taking a look at Tarantino's announced 10th and final film from 2023, The Movie Critic, that QT has just canceled. So until then, I'm the Reverend Scott K. May Tarantino be with you always.
This has been a Man with an Exceptional Beard production.